Hello and welcome to season 2 of Six Packs with Expats. I'm Patrick.
And I'm Carl.
And we are
CP Travels.
This season we'll be coming to you from a whole new set of locations. Each week we'll be introducing a whole new range of drinks, topics, and travel stories and advice. If you haven't already, be sure to drop us a rating and leave a comment on iTunes. You can also follow Six Packs with Expats on Twitter at CP underscore travels and join in the conversation by using the hashtag live adventurously, all one word. With that being said, let's start the show. So I decided to do a new segment for each show when we start, and it's called Unpopular Opinion. My unpopular opinion for the day is ranch is disgusting.
What?
I think ranch dressing is disgusting.
That's,
I think
what?
It's gross on salads, on pizzas, on chicken wings as a sauce. Like, no, it doesn't make sense. I don't like it. It's terrible. I hate it.
I just, okay, I want to start by saying that we did not script this, so I had no idea Patrick was going to say that at all. What I also will say is that's crazy. Now, ranch on pizza, that's disgusting.
No.
I understand that. That's gross. But ranch on chicken, I just had barbecue chicken wings yesterday with ranch on it.
Yeah, I know. You're
it
gross.
It was delicious.
You're gross. I watched you eat it, and I was disgusted the entire time.
The barbecue sauce was so good, though.
That's
oh, my God.
Barbecue sauce, yes, that is amazing. Barbecue sauce is a godsend. But ranch on pizza? Ugh. Gross.
Well,
ranch. Ranch in general is gross. Because ranch isn't a flavor. Like, what is that? What does it come from?
I think ranch
is a flavor. What does a ranch taste like? Like, when I think of ranch, I'm thinking of farms. I'm thinking of cow poop. I'm thinking of hay. I'm thinking of allergies.
Why are you thinking of any of those things?
Because that's what a ranch is. You never heard of ranch? A ranchero? Come on, dog.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's a very unpopular
opinion.
There
you go. Unpopular opinion for today. Ranch is disgusting. If you like it, let me know. If you don't let me know. I don't care. Whatever. Do what you want to do.
Live adventurously, as they say.
So
everybody knows, we are in a car, so you probably heard this lady just come on and say caution because we're running into traffic. That's okay. We've had quite the past 2 days. We are actually en route back to St. Louis from where we just come from.
Technically, we just came from New Orleans.
Yep, that's what I wanted to say.
So we're coming from New Orleans by way of Montgomery, Alabama, which is what we're going to get into talking about in just a minute.
Yep. So as you guys know already, our stay in New Orleans was, you may or may not know, if you've been following us, you know, but our stay in New Orleans was amazing. The food's great. The weather was hot. It was 98, 97, 99, respectively.
Except for that one day that it rained, and it It rains.
The streets
it
flooded.
Down.
We went to go see Deadpool 2 in the
we
entire movie
gonna,
theater.
We thought we was going to be able to wait out the rain by watching the movie. No. Nope.
Absolutely wrong on that. Didn't know the movie theater was flooded, like could flood the way that it flooded. It literally happened in the span of an hour and 20 minutes. We were 30 minutes into the movie, maybe, at most.
No, we were like 20 minutes into it.
And
maybe
then it was raining. Flood. Boom. Had to drive home in a flood. Couldn't see. Very, very limited visibility. But
it felt like
we
were driving home in a bathtub.
It did. It's that much water.
It was crazy. It was wild.
By nighttime, when we went hit Bourbon Street, all the water had dried up or went wherever water goes.
All the water
after
had
flood.
Dried up and everybody had forgot that it rained.
Yep. And everybody was enjoying Bourbon Street, which is a hell of a good time, by the way. If you haven't made it to Bourbon Street, go there. Do it. It's amazing. It's everything you think it'll be. And according to Patrick, it smells like throw up and poop. But
no, you get one day, it's Bourbon Street pretty much cycles through 1 or 2 days, right? If you go at night, it either smells like horse poop or it smells like throw up.
Uh-huh.
One or the other, right? That's all you're going to get. But no, it is a really good time. But again, New Orleans is a lot more than just Bourbon Street. It's a whole lot of stuff going on. Gang, whole lot of gang shit.
Yep. And
right? But no, I was going to say, before we get into the conversation about where we just came from, what are your thoughts and opinions on New Orleans? Because again, this was your first time going, Carl.
It was. It
your
was my virgin experience in New Orleans. Yeah. Well, I mean, I liked it. Again,
we should make shirts that say, I lost my virginity on Bourbon Street. We probably shouldn't make those.
Right. I was going to. Yeah. Nah. Yep. We was going in that part of the conversation.
We should say, I lost my virginity. Bourbon virginity?
Nope.
Still not good?
Nope.
All right. Fine.
You tried, though.
I did.
I like that effort. I'd rather have effort than nothing else, you know?
Hey, you know what they say.
You ain't first, you last.
I was going to say you miss every shot you don't take, but all right.
That too. Tell that to Steph Curry. But anyway.
I thought Kobe said that.
Kobe. But no, I really enjoyed my time in New Orleans. It was fun. Again, like I said, I love the weather was great. The food was amazing. There's a lot more to New Orleans than food. The architecture was great. I wish we had, you know, more time to spend in the Garden District. I wish we were able to do the cemetery, so we weren't able to do that. We were able to visit St. Louis Cemetery number 3.
Number 3.
And it was pretty cool. And, you know, if I do have a chance to come back, I will do more touristy things. But then we had a very filling 5 days in New Orleans with a whole lot of things. We enjoyed the adult beverages they have there. We got a full taste of the hospitality. We met up with people that, you know, have been living in New Orleans. So, I mean, we did a wide variety of things. And I like it. I like it. I don't like the weather. I don't think I could live, you know, in New Orleans because it's just hot all the time. And it's like a different kind of hot. It's, as my sister say, it's a disrespect your skin hot. It's like you wake up and your face sweating already.
New Orleans is the hot as Chicago is the Chicago winter is the cold.
Ah, that's actually a good comparison.
That's perfect because, you know, you go to Chicago in the wintertime, it's disrespect your coat cold. Like, you can't get through a Chicago winter without a coat from Chicago. It's got to be special made from, like, special Chicago Canadian geese or something. Like, that's it. But if you go to New Orleans, like, you got to be, what's that Bane quote when he's talking to Batman? He's like, oh, you really adopted the shadows. I was born in this.
I was born in it. That's one of my favorite lines from the Batman movie, by the way. I'm glad you quoted that. Shout out to you for liking Batman because of me. You're welcome. But yeah, New Orleans was amazing. Like, I really, really liked it. Again, it's a place I want to go back to. I got to see alligators. We got to see like 3 or 4 baby alligators. We did not see a big one. I got to hold one. It didn't bite me. What else we do? Oh, beignets. Talked about that last time, but beignets are delicious.
Oh, I see you got it right this time.
I did. I mispronounced that word all the time. Because it looks like baguette.
It does not look like baguette.
But it's
baguette
not pronounced
has
baguette.
An A in it.
Yeah, you know.
And a U.
A-E-I-O-U sometimes. Why? We all get those things, right?
No.
But, okay, so what was different about this New Orleans experience and your previous ones? Besides your best bro being there.
I was about to say, yeah, the main difference was y'all being there.
Okay.
I've been there a couple times before, so, you know, I got a lot of experience. Or, not, I wouldn't tell you a lot necessarily, but I have a relatively good amount of experience there. So I knew my way around. I knew some of the things that we were going to see. I sent y'all a bunch of links and things for us to do, but you chose not to read them. So a lot more things were like left on me to do the planning.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like we were just going, like, you know, we had like a set itinerary, which I liked. Like every day we woke up like, hey, what are some things y'all want to do today? I don't know, man. Patrick, what's the plan? Okay, well, I sent y'all these links. These are all the things that I think we should do. But since you ain't looked at it, apparently, we're going to do this today. So I think that was the main difference. That was the main difference.
Sounds like to me you had a gay old good time.
Also, it wasn't a vacation, so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also a big difference.
Yeah, that helped.
That's also a big difference.
Yeah, that
I stayed in a different location. But no, again, I enjoy every time I go to New Orleans. I have a really good time. Have a lot of fun.
And the last thing I want to talk about New Orleans is a lot of people always, you know, we always hear about Bourbon Street. And for me, going into it, like, the only way I pictured Bourbon Street was how I see it on TV during Mardi Gras, right? So, like, people standing up on balconies, throwing beads at people. Did we see that? Yes, we did. Not as much as I feel like we would see it during Mardi Gras, but we saw that. But it is, like, you know, like, if you've ever been to walk to a beer street. But, like, imagine a beer street with a bunch of bars and clubs and different varieties of clubs. Sorry, variations of clubs on one long street with also good food. I mean, it's just a good time. Like, you can walk down it and do anything you want to down Bourbon Street.
Good examples from, like, at least a couple cities that I can think of. If you're in St. Louis, it's similar to the Loop.
Okay.
Imagine the Loop with, like, balconies. If you in
Chicago, it's like Division and Rush.
There you go. If you're in Indianapolis, it's like Broad Ripple.
Broad Ripple, but a lot better and a lot bigger.
Yeah. Let's see. In Arkansas, it's kind of like that. Being like, if you're in Little Rock, it's down by like the Riverwalk. Houston, I can't think of nothing. Houston.
Yeah.
I ain't spent enough time in Houston yet. Until, like,
if you're in LA, it's like going to Hollywood.
No, it's not. You ain't even been to Hollywood.
Hollywood's
terrible. Don't know. Nobody in LA wants to go to Hollywood.
Why? I thought that's where all the cool stuff was.
No, that's a lie. But we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about our time in New Orleans. So again, Carl, you talked about the food and stuff before, and I know we've talked about this, but I cannot stress enough how good the food in New Orleans is.
It's spicy sometimes.
It's spicy most of the time.
And apparently you can't ask them to put butter on your crawfish or your crab legs. Didn't know that.
No, this is a quick tip, right? So In most other places around the country, if you're getting seafood, if you're getting crab legs, you're getting lobster, you're getting your whatever, we might get, you know, you get your garlic butter, you get your whatever to dip it in. In New Orleans, they don't do that. They cook it in a bowl. You eat it in the bowl that it's cooked in. That's it.
And it's good.
And so. It's good. It's not like, it's not even an and it's good. It's like, it is good.
It is good.
That's it. Like, don't ask for it, because somebody will curse you out and they will put you out of their store. Like, simple as that.
Don't disrespect the chef. Just respect the process.
Exactly.
Shout out to Philly.
Exactly. Wait, to Philly? Who's Philly? Oh, okay.
Yeah, basketball reference. Sorry.
I was trying to, like, where Ferkin was before you said, I'm like, what are you talking about, Philly? I thought you were talking about, like, Big Philly from DePaul. Like, he said that, but.
No, he did not. So, yeah. So, I mean, the food, I think you're going to talk about the food. So, the food, again, we had, Patrick had gumbo. How was the gumbo?
Man, that gumbo was so good. Whew, that gumbo was so good. So, the best place, in my opinion, the best place to go to get food, is this hood spot on 27th and Grand called Cajuns. Shout out to Misha because she put me on. But they have the best food. The absolute best food. It's a little hood spot next to a laundromat. It's next to a church, a funeral home, another laundromat, a little shopping mall down the street from a tattoo place to do 2-for-1 tattoos on Fridays. Dog, Cajuns, that's the spot. That's the spot to go to. And that's where we went. Remember, we went there. We got your crawfish from there. You got the crab legs. But that's where I got that gumbo from. And dog, so I got this huge, it's maybe like, I don't even know. What's like the metric system version? Imagine you got like 4 big Gatorades worth of gumbo.
Four
big Gatorades worth of gumbo for $9. Yeah. And it's like the best gumbo you ever had. Man.
It was really good gumbo. Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't taste it, but it looked like it would have had crab in it.
Man, it had so much crab in it.
Like crawfish meat, shrimp meat.
It had crab. It got beef. Crab, crawfish. Crawfish. It's got your Aunt Julie sausage. It's got the chicken. It's got everything in it that you want. They bring you like the smallest plate of rice because they like, nah, you ain't even eat this. You just gonna drink it out the cup.
And it was good.
It come in a lean cup.
And the crab legs I had there were full of meat. Like, you know, sometimes you get crab legs and like it have like a little bit of meat or not as much meat. Snow crab.
Yeah, snow crab.
Snow crab legs were filled. Like the meat was thick. It was juicy. It was made to perfection. I'm like, man. I'm a seafood guru, if you will. Like, I love eating seafood all the time. That was probably the best snow crab legs I've ever had in my life. And I've had snow crab legs in about 20 different countries. Definitely the best I've ever had. Best I've had.
Hands down, man.
Now, see, I mean, food there is great. Really love New Orleans. Now, I want to get into something that we just did. A little bit more serious.
Before we talk about that, we gotta initiate what's actually going on. So when we went to New Orleans, we all bought one-way tickets down there because we got a pretty good sale. From Chicago to New Orleans, about what, $50?
$50.
$50 flew down there. Super cheap.
An airplane.
Of course, Carl. What else are we gonna fly down on? You taking a hang glider? But
don't know my life.
Flew down there. Shut up. Flew down there on these super cheap flights. But then we decided, you're like, you know what? Let's go ahead and drive back because late last year, Carl and I, we had set up to do the road trip. But due to unforeseen circumstances, both of us were not able to go on the road trip. So I drove across the country by myself. But it's cool. But we wanted to go ahead and make up for that lost time so that way we can podcast on the road, you know, stuff that we planned on doing. But very recently in the news, I was watching like CNN or 60 Minutes or something like that. I saw this museum that was opening up in the South. And it is the, what's it called, the Freedom and Justice Museum?
The National Museum for Peace and Justice.
There we go. National Museum for Peace and Justice. And it was opening up in Montgomery, Alabama. So I was like, huh, we gonna be in New Orleans? Montgomery ain't that far. It was like 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
So it was like 4 or 5 hour drive. We decided to go there first before making out pushing back up north towards St. Louis and Chicago. So we decided to go that way. And that's what we did this morning. So right now, as we're on the road, we're actually going back, or we're going to St. Louis from the museum. We just left, and initial reaction to it is just wow.
So, before we get, well, like reactions are good. I want to I want to jump in on what you said a little bit earlier.
Go ahead.
We've said podcasting and driving. My little sister's in the car. She's driving. So don't worry, guys. We are safe. First and foremost, safety's first. But yeah, so the first museum we went to was the National Memorial. Sorry. The first place we went to was the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, right? And a lot of people refer to it as the Lynching Museum. Why they refer to it as Lynching Museum is because it is a place where they pay homage to. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Pay homage to and they also celebrate. It's not celebrate. They recognize people who have been victims of lynching in America for over the past 300 years. Right.
Yeah.
So more than. Go ahead.
No, and I was like, the reason they call it that again, in addition to what Carl said, is because the actual monuments there, they're monuments. The actual monuments that they have there are their wrought iron boxes.
Yep.
That have the county and the state that these lynchings took place, as well as the names of certain individuals and the dates in which the lynching happened. Throughout the memorial. Now, what really hit me is like each, I don't know if you noticed, but you pay much attention to it, but like each box is the same size as the average person. And when you first walk in, they're all at eye level to you. And some of them have maybe one name, some of them have three names, some of them have 12 names, some of them have 20 names. But as you're walking through, you slowly descend, but the monuments stay at the same height. So it's built like that to represent an actual lynching. So by the time you get to the end of it, you're looking up at these people or these monuments that represent these people, and it's meant to signify like someone actually was hung. This is the height at which they are hung, right? This, like, each one is the same size as a normal person and been hung. Like, it was, when I went in, it was, I didn't know what I was expecting. I'd seen about it and I researched it before, but honestly, I didn't know what I was about to walk into, and it blew my mind. It was tough.
Agree. And the secondary name for it is the National Lynching Memorial. So I wanted to correct myself on that.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
The National Lynching Memorial. And it's a sacred space for truth telling and reflection about racial terror in America and its legacy. So for me, I had no idea until I actually got there. I did a little bit of research, but I also like to wait until I get to a place to kind of, you know, to kind of take it all in as you know, as it is, before I actually go back and do a little bit of Googling about it. I kind of want to learn as much as I can while I'm there. So, you know, I found out that there's more than 4,400 African-American men, women, and children that were hanged, burned alive, shot, drowned, and beaten to death by white mobs between 1877 and 1950. Like, just let that sink in for a second. Between 1877 and 1950. And these were just the ones that were documented. So there may have been thousands and thousands more.
80 years.
Yeah, like that's between a span of 80 years. And as we all know, from 1950 even till now, like there was a lynching in America last year, the year before that. Like, things are still happening.
It was an attempted lynching only a couple days ago.
Right. So, I mean, it's not something that's stopping that, you know, it's not going on anymore. So, like Patrick said, like, when I walked in, like, the first thing was, like, honestly, I was really emotional. I walked in. Of course, you can't take loud pictures. Like, people are really solemn. Like, we're, like, walking through, observing. And we talked to a few people who actually had, who had known someone that actually was a victim of lynching, or knew someone who knew someone that they were searching for, and they're actually able to find that statue or that monument of that person and where they're from and their lifespan and when they died from the actual lynching. So for me, it was a very powerful moment. I kind of wanted to step back and like take it all in, because me and my sister were talking, like, lynching is something that, like, it's just like, I just couldn't imagine. I can't imagine someone being evil enough to sit there, and like, people would gather around in crowds to watch other people be lynched.
Tens of thousands of people, like thousands and thousands of people would come and watch these things. They were public spectacles.
And yeah.
Oftentimes the authorities would work with mobs in order to have something, like they would turn over individuals to the mob in order for these things to happen. Like, it's wild. It's so wild.
And like, as you walk down through the memorial, on the walls, they would write, they had written down a list of reasons as to why certain people were being lynched. and what they were lynched for. So one of them was like, a black man was lynched for whistling at a white woman. A black man was lynched for drinking water out of the whites only drinking fountain. A black man or a black woman was lynched for asking a white lady for help. A black man was lynched for
he was killed for breathing.
Yeah, he was
breathing in someone's direction, this white woman's direction.
And he was lynched for that. So, like, going through and I think there was about 50 to 100 descriptions of those.
Yeah.
And reading
they didn't,
each
they
of
didn't,
those.
They didn't give descriptions for each and every one of them. But
yeah.
They gave them for enough just to, like, kind of give you an idea of, like, the breadth of what exactly was going on. And it was, again, it's just wild. It's just crazy. Because all of these lynchings, all of these murders of black people were justified by law. They were supported. There was legal documentation that supported and justified that. And that part is what blew my mind. And I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but just a correlation between the lynching, the memorial, and the museum. One of the most powerful pictures I saw in the museum was of a black man getting ready to be hung in Texas. And it said 10,000 visitors or 10,000 people come to watch the public execution of this one particular man. And as he's standing on the scaffolding, for lack of a better word, as he's standing on that, it reads justice. So I'm like, this is what America's definition of justice was for these crimes. It's like, no, this is punishable by death. Like that, when I saw that, man, again, we just left.
Yeah, we just left maybe 30 minutes ago.
Not even 30 minutes, but yeah, we literally just left this, and it's like I'm still kind of like working on formulating the words.
So the museum that Patrick is talking about is called the Legacy Museum from Enslavement to Mass Incarceration, right? It's located on the site of a former warehouse where black people were enslaved in Montgomery, Alabama. Side note before I continue to describe an actual museum, Montgomery, Alabama had the highest population of slaves living in that state of 23,517. I remember reading that in the actual museum. Right, so this narrative museum uses interactive media, sculpture, videography, and exhibits to immerse visitors like us in the sights and sounds of the domestic slave trade, racial terrorism, the Jim Crow South, and the world's largest prison system. Right, so from enslavement to mass incarceration. So the museum itself does a great job. Well, it tells the story of how we went from being enslaved as black people to using the prison system as a way to continuously enslave us and prevent us from actually living full human lives. Right, so a lot of the museum focuses on slavery, but it also makes ties between slavery and modern day slavery, which is the American prison system that we have still in the country today and still has a lot of unfair laws that negatively affect black people from all walks of life. So I mean, for me, again, as I was walking through, the first thing they have up there, as soon as you walk in, on the left, on the right hand side, are these ghost stories from former slaves. It was men, women, and children slaves that would tell you ghost stories about their experience being slaves. But then as soon as you walk in, you hit a left on the left hand side of the wall. It's letters from white people saying that slaves saying that their slaves had escaped, and they were writing letters describing the slaves that had escaped and saying, I'll give you $1,000 to get the slaves back. And some of the things I read was like, oh, I want the slave. He's 5'6". He's really good at playing the violin. He's not too smart, but he's really good with tools. He has a big bulky chest. Like, he's one of my favorite slaves. So if you find him in these areas, I'll give you $1,000. And then there's another one that says, oh, she's a beautiful lady. She's 5'9" inches tall. She's really good at the kitchen. She's great at picking cotton. Like, if you find this one, she brings a lot to me. I'll give you $900 for her. But like, the value that they placed on black lives was $900, and they limited them to what they could do for them and not even valuing them as people at all. It was like, no, she can do this for me, and the value of her life is $900. And some of them said, and then one of them was like, oh, if you find him, the way that you'll notice who he is he'll have one long whip down the center of his back, and that's from my whip, and I put that there to mark him as mine, so if he ever got lost, I know how to find him. Like, and that's what you see, boom, as soon as you walk in. And it's powerful. For me, it's like, as a black man, with everything that's going on in the world today, with the police shootings, with black men going to prison, black men, women, and children going to prison. Like, I read something about there that said, a lot, there's still 12 states that don't have a minimum age for children to be tried as adults.
13 states, but yeah.
Thank you. 13 states for children to be tried. That means there was a letter written by a 13-year-old boy who said he'd been in jail for 9 years in an adult prison, and he wrote about being raped, being violently beaten, and all these things by older men.
I got another fact. Just in 2005, they just made it illegal to put juveniles on the death penalty. 2005.
In 2005, they just made it legal. And again, yeah, they said because it was cruel. Yeah. It was cruel and unusual punishment. But again, until 2005, like, all of that was justified.
Not too long ago.
And there was a black man that just got exonerated for a crime that he did not commit when he was 14 years old. Like, this was, and when I say very recently, I mean, today is the 19th, within the last 7 days. Again, it's absolutely ridiculous to think about what's happening in the country now and what's been happening.
And then in Alabama, in its constitution, it's still I can't quote the exact wording, but essentially it's still legal for black and white kids to be segregated in schools, in their education system. So that's why that fact about Alabama having the highest population of slaves in its state was really important, because some of these laws are still around, and it was really, really important for Alabama white people because they made so much money off of slavery. And like basically because they had so much free labor and they were able to do so much and grow so much that they were really, really opposed to any laws that abolished slavery. And even after these laws were gone, in their actual constitution present day, it's still illegal for blacks to have certain rights, which just speaks to the impact and the power, you know what I'm saying, the power dynamic that was taking place in Alabama, and how long, you know, these negative things that happened to blacks were happening and are continuously happening in present day. So, I mean, to me, it was like, to me, that's powerful. I mean, that speaks a lot to, you know, to the culture of that state. The fact that it's still in the state constitution. It was ruled illegal by the Supreme Court, but it's still a part of their constitution. I mean, I don't really, and one of the things that the museum does well is it doesn't just state those facts for you to just read. After each of those facts we just stated, they always ask a question of what can we do to change this? Is this right? How do you feel about it, right? That actually leads you to question things that you're reading and not just reading them just to read them for reading's sake. I did. I was talking too much. I want to stop talking because I was getting real emotional about it. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
But yeah, no, go ahead. So, I mean, yeah, it was, I mean, the museum, I mean, walking through the lynching memorial was, I mean, it, to me, it was like, man, I was thinking about my grandparents who actually lived through these things. I'm thinking about my mother who talked about driving to school on the school bus and having white kids throw rocks at the school bus, having to run home from school, and her being an only child and being a woman and living through these things. Like, my grandparents not legally being able to go to school, not legally being able to go to college and do all the things that we're doing. And it really makes me appreciative of what I have and more aware of, you know, of the benefits of what I have today. Because, again, not too long ago, in someone's lifetime that I can still speak to today, these things were happening. Lynchings were happening. Like, our grandparents witnessed lynchings, walking home from work, going to school, it's unreal that this is so close in our history. Again, I've known these things. I mean, I've known these things for years. But again, it's always whenever you actually sit down and
it's something that you haven't been confronted
with, yeah,
in this manner until now. And for me, while we were at the memorial, I tell most people, you know, I was born and raised in Arkansas, north of Little Rock, so that's Pulaski County. But my grandparents are still there. My parents were born and raised there. And obviously Arkansas is part of the South. But in there they have some of the monuments in the memorial are from Arkansas. And I felt inclined while I was there. I tried to call my dad, but he was at work. So I called my grandparents to ask what county they grew up in, to see if they knew any of these names that I saw on the thing. And it's just weird, like, initially just being able to call your grandparents and just say, hey, do you all, like, I'm at this museum that's all about lynchings. Do you happen to know any of these family names? Because I'd be interested to know if you know any of them. like that. That in and of itself, that's a crazy concept that I can call someone on the phone and say, hey, do you know any of these people that were killed publicly for whatever? And I was talking to them. I'm like, hey, you know anyone in the Pulaski County area? My grandma was like, no, but you know, I was raised in this area. So I walked maybe 12 steps to go see where there's a record of like these lynchings. And she's like, I was like, no. She's like, I don't know any of these names. Maybe your granddad knows some. From this area, or from this area, or from this area. Like, this is just, to me, it's just wild that there is a whole, like you said, it's a whole generation of people that can just point, or we can still communicate with and ask those kind of questions. Do you know someone who was killed publicly like this?
And for me, and I think as expats, here's where it kind of hit home for me even deeper, right? So, we've both lived in Taiwan, right? We lived in Taiwan for 7 years. I traveled to China, right? I've traveled to other countries. And when in some instances, when I was in China, even in Taiwan, I was met with fear from other people, right? From Chinese people who have never seen a black person before, or Taiwanese people who maybe have seen a person of color before. But again, they were afraid of me just because I was a black person, right? So they would either grab their purse, or they would like they would turn away, or they would move to another train car, you know, stuff like that. And for me, the United States of American government president at the time actually made a law, or the war on drugs, in an attempt, a very successful attempt, in my opinion, to criminalize black people and to continue to have black people seen as a threat to society and a threat to people. I forget which president.
Reagan?
Nixon. Reagan? It was one of them. I don't remember which one.
Nixon was war on drugs. Reaganomics, which criminalized cocaine. And, yeah, okay. It was pretty much a continuation. All
right. Yeah, and right, and thing is, like, it's still a problem present day in how we interact with the police. Because, again, back then, the police were able to just randomly arrest people of color for whatever reasons they wanted to.
That's when stop and frisk began.
The stop and frisk was there. And back in those days, they would actually help with lynchings that were taking place. They would be taking black people to jail who were violating the whites only rules that were a part of certain communities. So I mean, for us, there's a long history of disrespect and dishonor that black people have with police officers.
Police distrust.
And it's valid, because if just 50 years ago police were arresting our grandparents for no reason at all, or people that our grandparents knew for no reason at all, and then involved in lynchings, why would we as a people, as a culture, put trust in people who are opposed to serve and protect, when not so long ago they weren't really serving and protecting at all, right? So that
distrust,
at least
not serving and protecting our community.
Right, exactly. So like, that distrust is valid in a lot of ways. And I think, again, it's revisiting the facts, seeing the photos, going through a museum and a memorial like that to kind of put those things in perspective. It's like, man, this has been going on for years, and it was a part of, you know, the America that we're all a part of, we grow up in, and we reap benefits from now. But there are also a lot of not benefits that we don't reap because of the history behind how we as a people and as a culture have been treated for so long. And again, it really just highlights those things and how important it is for black people to know their culture, to really understand their history, what's been going on for years and years and years, and how we've gotten to the place that we are now, and to really, you know, be thankful that we had such strong ancestors and such strong family members who lived, survived, and thrived during those times to get us to where we are now. Because again, I could not imagine. Like, I already am, like, for example, like, we're driving, and if a police officer is about to pull me over, I'm scared now, right? Like, I'm nervous, I'm scared, I don't know what to expect, but I also know that there's a less likely chance that I'll be killed. It's still a possibility, but less likely. But back then,
man, I don't feel that same right? way. I mean, you might feel like that.
For the sake of comparisons, like, I couldn't imagine walking down the street,
yeah,
and not being able to look in a direction, to, like you said, to breathe on somebody without fear of, like, living like that, that emotional trauma, which is like, people who have lived through that, like our family members are, like everybody who's still alive, and like that takes a lot of, I don't even know what to call it, but like something that I'm just thankful that they had, so that, you know, we all are able to live, you know, how we're living now. But just like keeping those things in perspective and being aware of those things is really, I mean, it's really important. It's really powerful. I don't know how you feel about it, but I mean, for me, it's just it put all those things in perspective for me.
No, I feel the same way. I understand. It's hard to put into words, you know, what our ancestors went through.
Please drive straight.
But also what we just experienced. Like it's tough, dog. It's a very, very tough thing to deal with.
But I think overall I'll say that I think everybody should make it a point to visit the lynching memorial and to visit the museum, because I mean, again, it was much needed. I think for me, I'm still kind of processing what I saw and how I feel about it, and how I like to discuss it. But again, it was a really good visit. I'm glad we made the trip. I'm glad we drove. And again, I have so many feelings right now. It's kind of hard to put into words. But we did want to give you guys, you know, like a fresh perspective, and like, bam, we just went. Here's our immediate reaction to it. I'm really, really glad like whoever made the Lynch Memorial did it. And turn I hope right that there are more memorials that are created to tell us about our history, and like, you know, to really let us know what it was like back then, and to tell us how far we've come as a people and as a country. And how much farther we have to go still.
Agreed, wholeheartedly, man. Wholeheartedly. Yeah, I mean, it's deep.
Deep, deep. So, on that note, yeah, that was a lot, guys. We love to hear your feedback. If you visited either of those locations and you want to give us, you know, any feedback or any comments, we're open. We'd love to hear those. Please DM us, message us, comment, share, do whatever you have to, because again, we want as much perspective on this as we possibly can. For anything else you want us to go over after you've done your little Google of these two locations that we described, shoot us a message. We'll definitely talk about it on our next podcast. We're all about that. We'll probably circle back to this and, you know, give more feedback on this experience as well.
A little bit more time to let things process. But before we go, before we completely end it, as always, this is Six Packs with X-Pack, so we do have our drinks with us right now. Since we are driving, we are not drinking beer or any kind of alcoholic beverages. I have with me in the back a Smart Water. It tastes like water, except it costs more. The reason I bought this was because I needed a big bottle, and where I was didn't have no big bottles. So would I recommend this? I mean, yeah, it's water. Drink water. And if you just find a Smart Water bottle, then, you know, rinse it out and then put your tap water in there. So...
Up to bam. I am drinking
5 out of 10 would recommend
1873 Deer Park 100% natural spring water. It's delicious. I bought it for $1 at the Lynch Memorial. Support black business all day, baby. cptravels.com.
All right, but with that being said, we're gonna bid you all adieu.
I'm Carl.
I'm Patrick.
And we are CP Travels. Woo!